Accession number 27258, Mr. Len Starkill, Reel 5. Now, what happened after your marriage then? Because you went on this course, but let's how did it all happen?
I went on a course to Plymouth later, I'd had two courses, one beginning in January to February, and then about March I went on a further course to Plymouth. But this particular one in early January was the most gruesome course that I've ever experienced. They'd got 2% fatal casualties.
Now tell us about that course first then.
Right then, we were promoted, I was given an extra stripe, sergeant, I made up a sergeant for the course. And it was in a army summer camp, an old army summer camp.
What was it called?
In the middle of Bellaby Moor, near Leyburn, just outside of Leyburn village in Yorkshire. And of course the weather was bad, everywhere was wet, and we had to do various things, like knocking out the tank, what they call them, the tracks. Tank tracks.
Now, how would you do that?
With Mills grenades. But we weren't using actually Mills grenades, we were using Mills 69, which was a Bakelite thing. Just to remind, there was a loud bang, and you got to be careful with them because they sent shards of Bakelite or plastic, whatever it was. One lad had one drop near his leg, and it was and he had it inside of his legs, covered with the shrapnel off one of them. Another lad attempting to put one under a tank got caught, and he was killed.
Well, he was actually run over.
He was run over with the tank, yes. And another time, going across a rope bridge over a swollen river, of course, at that time of the year, you could expect it was just a double wire bridge across. Well, it was rope, not wire, it was rope. And this lad slipped. Well, he had a pack on his back, and it filled with water, and he drowned. We never recovered his body for weeks after. Well, not while we were there. But the thing about that I most remember about the camp, apart from the weapon training, we had a lot of weapon training.
Tell us a bit about that.
Well, we had a Bren gun on a fixed low tripod on a fixed line, and we'd got to crawl under barbed wire while this Bren gun sprayed about 2 foot above our crawling bodies. We were crawling along, and you could hear the crackling of the bullets through the air above your head, just above your head. And this was sort of experience of gunfire on yourself. And another time we did house to house, what they call mouse holing.
Tell me about that, we've not heard much about
well,
that.
Well, mouse holing is when you're in enemy territory and the enemy at one set part, and you were in a sort of terrace-type houses, empty, of course, and you had to bash your way through the walls from one house to the next to while you were undercover, you see.
Now, how did you actually do that?
Well, we did this with either Bren gun fire, if they were only inside walls, Bren gun fire, you could knock yourself all in, or you could use your little shovel that had a little pickaxe handle on it. You could use that. But you'd got to make yourself weird just to get enough to get through to get to the other end of the street. To get to your nearest to the enemy without being while you're undercover. But the main thing about the course that sticks in my mind was we were granted leave from Saturday lunchtime till midnight, well, till first parade on the Monday morning. Now, it was snowing, and when I left, we had to walk down to Leyburn, get a bus from Leyburn to Richmond, and then from Richmond to Hartlepool. The bus got through fine, although the snow was 4 inches on the day. After spending a nice weekend, quiet weekend with the wife and mother-in-law, I came back with a marine from Hartlepool that I'd met there. And we arranged to meet at the bus station at 4 o'clock to get the bus back to Richmond. Well, the bus would only go as far as Darlington. But there was another bus that would said it would take us to Richmond. So Richmond was the nearest we could get. So we got to Richmond, and then there was no buses then through to Bellaby Moor or Leyburn. So we knew that we would be returned to unit if we didn't make the first parade on the Monday morning. Well, some of the chaps, about three or four of them, they stopped at an hotel in Richmond. But this Marine and I decided we would go and have a couple of whiskies in the Crown Hotel in Richmond and walk back. Well, it was about 16 to 17 miles from Richmond to the camp. So all you could see was the humps of the edges on either side of the road. And we set off at 10 o'clock, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, we eventually landed back at camp. But it was only by good fortune that we managed to do this, insomuch as we saw this farm, because we didn't know exactly which way to turn at this point. And we knocked on his window with his clothes pole that we'd found outside, and the head poked out the window. And I said, "We're lost. We're trying to make our way to Bellaby Moor camp." "Oh," he said, "when you see yon oak tree over there," and he pointed, he said, "keep that in mind and go straight there." Well, it was a case of going over fields, through hedges and whatnot. But we kept this oak tree in mind and sight, and we got there 3 o'clock back into our billet, which were Hutman's, at 3 o'clock in the morning. Soaked through, our clothes were wringing wet because it was snowing all the while. So we spent from 3 o'clock until the first parade drying our clothes out round this pot-bellied boiler. But the irony of it was, on our first parade, we had to crawl about 100 yards in the snow with snow on our back to keep up to this so-called enemy. And this was before breakfast. And so you can imagine how we felt after drying our clothes out and going there. Still, I finished the course and I had a couple of days leave after that, which I spent at home with, because in the meantime, during this course, the wife's mother had a fall and she came home. So she was back home and I was able to visit her. But it was quite a grueling course. I've never experienced like it. And the course was made from the Army, Navy and Air Force. All three services were involved. There was representatives from each of the services.
And you passed?
I passed. I got recommended sergeant for that.
And were you promoted to sergeant with the unit or...?
No, because in 1942 they were starting to wind down, weren't they? I would have got promotion if things had stopped on one level playing field. But they were winding them down. And this was about the time that these orders were coming through, that they were disbanding the Coastal Defence and sending a lot of them into the infantry. Below the rank of bombardier were going into the infantry, selected ones. Well, I was a bombardier at the time, so I didn't go. I just stopped on and carried on the duties. Because by this time, 1942, our guns had been changed from just a Mark 7 coast defence gun to a Mark 24 AK-AK as well. So
what do you mean by that? What type of gun was this? Was it 6-inch still?
It was still 6-inch, but it was a Mark 24 with a high angle.
So it was dual purpose?
For dual purpose, yeah. So we were at the time we were busy sort of learning a different type of drill on that in 1942, as these other chaps below the rank of bombardier were going into the infantry. Just selected ones, not all, the selected ones were going into the infantry. And then...
Weren't you a bit short of men to man the guns?
Well, we'd had an intake, you see, of militia. And this complemented our... And also we had a lot of images that had been too young to go to France at the beginning of the war. And, of course, they didn't qualify at the time.
So what happened next, then?
Well, after that... We had orders come through on for various things to volunteer for glider pilots and airborne division, which I applied for.
Now tell me about that. What happened?
Well, it came through on a part two War Office instruction. The order was printed, but it was left to the officers in charge of the battery as to whether they could go, so it was selected ones that went. Well, because I was a bombardier, I was too that spent that much money on courses as an instructor, I was too valuable as an instructor for them to lose, so they wouldn't let me go. Both airborne and glider pilots, they wouldn't let me go. And then late in 42 just carried on then.
Anything happening? I mean, any action in the sense of either firing the guns at the ships or at aircraft?
Only once we had to fire the gun. It was a ship that had slipped by the examination vessel.
Now tell me what happened with that.
Well, we were called on by the battery observation post, the fire command post, to fire a shot across the bows. And it's a blank shot, and it's flat-headed, the shell is flat-headed, and it made a lot of noise and a big splash. And this was to stop sort of ahead of the ship, just to stop it. And the examination vessel was able to carry on then doing its job, examining the vessel before it went into port. But it was stopped.
It was just a ship that...
It was just a one-off ship that had got by the examination vessel, whether it was a foreign one and they couldn't understand the examination vessel or whatever. Because there was examination vessel outside of each port to make sure that the ships that were coming in were...
Any other action?
Nothing at all much, apart from Lewis gun. I believe I mentioned this.
You mentioned that. But no other firing and in the aircraft role? Not even with a new 6-inch?
Not with a new Mark 24s, no.
So what happens next then?
Well, there was nothing, a lot happened apart from just normal training. But in the beginning of 43, there was this instruction came out on War Office 1 instruction where the commanding officer of the battery or regiment couldn't stop you once you volunteered, and that was into the Royal Navy. And of course that took some time, because
now did you want to volunteer for the Royal Navy?
Yes.
Why?
Well, the reason was we were stationed not far away from home, right? So I was always wanting to be home. I was very unsettled, always wanting to, you know, to be have weekend leaves and night leaves and that. I was very unsettled. So this was the reason I was volunteering for all these different things.
And when was this? Was this January 43 or when about?
Well, at the end of 42, beginning of 43.
So that was your last contact with the unit then? You finished your...
Well, yes, in 43.
Now, what happened then?
Well, we went... The centres from then to what they call Trifibian 2, which was at Pennypot Lane, Harrogate. And this was summer
you've
camp.
Got this as Trifibian 1 in your notes.
Oh, well, Trifibian 1. That's it. Trifibian 1 at Pennypot Lane and Trifibian 2 was at Blackpool.
Now, what happened at Pennypot Lane?
Well, Pennypot Lane was the sort of changeover from the Army to the Navy as regards marching drill. And so much of our clothing issued.
Now tell me about, we'll do the kitting out first, because of course it's a completely new uniform. What were you kitted out with?
Well, we were kitted out with two suits of blues, which was trousers and top. Also, a blue Guernsey, which was knitted Guernsey for winter wear. And boots. We got issues with boots.
Now, what did you think of the Navy uniform in comparison to the Army uniform?
Well, at first, it didn't matter as much because we were issued with khaki. And khaki on your skin when you first get it is if it's itchy. Well, it was no difference to the Navy serge. So it didn't make a lot of difference. But you felt different. This was the thing. You felt very different in that. You had no belt around your middle and such like. And
what about the drill, the differences in drill? Can you comment on that?
Yes, the commands in the Army were given on the left foot. And in the Navy were given on the right foot. When you were in marching drill and you were given a different command, they were given on the right foot.
Did it take long to get you? I mean, that's after 4 or 5 years. I mean, you've
been to... it did. But at the same time, we were used to being drilled and we soon accommodated to it. And especially when we were allowed to take each other. They would pick one out and say, right, now you've got to concentrate on giving the order on the right foot instead of the left. So that helped us quite a lot.
Now, how long were you there at Trifibian 1?
We were only at Trifibian about a fortnight, about 2 weeks.
And then the next one was Trifibian 2?
Trifibian 2, which was at a holiday camp just outside of Blackpool. St. Anne's, it was, the place. I think it's still a thriving holiday camp now.
And what was happening at Trifibian 2?
Well, Trifibian 2, we were... given small arms drill with our rifles. We were issued with the remainder of our kit, which was white shirts for to go under for summer wear. Our collars, were issued. Cap bands were just a standard cap band, HMS. And we were sorted out, and from there...
Now, what else were you doing there?
Nothing much apart from drill and one or two lectures about the Navy, you know, and the difference between the Army and the Navy. But you were sort of taught naval history. They dwelt a lot on naval history.
In what way?
Well, the taught is about, you know, from Trafalgar and things like this. And routine as well, naval routine, which was different. And our ship was divided up in parts, the forecastle, the midships, and how the mess decks were worked out as well. In general, because they varied from ship to ship, of course. I mean, the forecastle on a battle wagon would be different to a forecastle on a destroyer. And the quarter deck would be different.
So what happened next? So you weren't there long either, were you?
No, only about
so
a fortnight.
So this is just sort of January, February 1943?
Yeah.
So where next?
Well, we went from there to HMS Ganges.
Now that's the shore station, isn't it?
Yeah. Now from Trifibian 2, we were split up. Some went to Chatham, some went to Portsmouth, some went to somewhere else, various divisions in the Navy. One or two of us from the Youth Battery went to Chatham.
Now, tell me about your training. What were your first impressions of HMS Ganges?
Well, the first impressions was awesome. It was such a big place. We went, by this time, we had these massive kit bags and a seagoing bag and a case. And we got to take all these down to this drill shed, which was massive. And all being strange to us, the only thing that wasn't strange was the discipline. We knew more about discipline, where a lot of the young recruits didn't, you know, first time into the forces. And we were introduced then to the gunnery division, and so many of us went onto the gunnery course.
Did you do that?
I went onto the gunnery course, but I didn't finish it, because I was moved drafted to HMS Archer. And this was
I thought that was from Chatham, it says here, you went to HMS Archer.
Well, Chatham was the gunnery school. Chatham Gunnery School.
Right. Now,
it wasn't...
Let's do your training at Shotley first, because you were there for 5 weeks, so basic training, it says here.
Basic training.
Now, tell me about what that basic training was at the Ganges. What do you remember of your basic training as a sailor?
The main thing I remember, they'd brought out petty officers as being retired, and they were treating us like boys, because it was a boys' training school before the war was Ganges. And we complained to the officer, the day officer, that we'd already been disciplined. We knew all about discipline. We didn't want petty officers smacking us over the back of the head and having to call a leading seaman sir or a petty officer sir. We knew this wasn't right. So we got this sanction knocked off.
What were you actually learning in those 5 weeks?
We were learning marching drill, lectures, swimming. The emphasis was on the swimming.
Now tell me about that.
Well, you had to be able to swim for 25 yards with a canvas suit on. And you'd have to, not only that, but you'd got to be able to keep afloat for 10 minutes just treading water. And unless you could do this, then you couldn't go on night leave across the water to Ipswich.
Now, could you swim when you got there?
Oh, yes, yes.
So this was just a test for you. Did you pass the test?
Oh, yes, without a doubt.
Was it tough or was it pretty easy for you?
Well, it was a bit cumbersome with a big, heavy canvas suit on. And you felt it heavy around your legs, but you managed to keep afloat all right.
Now, what other training were you doing there?
As I say, apart from lectures and this marching drill and the swimming, they showed us on a 6-inch gun there, but of course it wasn't much of a drill. It just more or less showed us it.
And you'd know that, I presume.
But we knew what a 6-inch gun looked like, but it was different from the naval ones.
In what way?
Different from the army ones. Well, the make of it was the where the army guns was in a well with a big pivot thing on you know, and you one of the cases of firing was a case too where you went underneath the gun to work the dials. With a naval gun, there isn't. They were all up top. And it was the pivot was slightly shorter.
So it was quite new to you then?
Oh, yes. But the general principle was the same.
Now, what else were you doing? Any seamanship training?
Seamanship, yes. We had to climb the mast. We learned all about knots and things like this. We learned the different parts of a ship. And general seamanship we were taught. That was at Ganges. and we had to parade on the mast, and we had to what they call man the mast. And this was so many on the rat lines going up to the top of the mast, and so many on the safety net, so that it looked something, you know, had your photograph taken.
Now, how did you have to climb the whole? Did you have to go right to the top of the mast?
Right to the top of the mast.
How did you do with the masthead, Joe? Because it's quite high, isn't it?
Oh yeah. So you had to be squeamish about height.
Were you all right with it?
Yeah. Well, there was actually one chap that on the top, what we used to call a tea cake, yeah. And on the top it was only about a foot across, yeah. And this was a flat plate on the right on the very top of the mast, about that one. And he'd got to get up the top ladder and stand on the top, freestanding on the top. And how the hell he did it, I don't know, but he did it and come off. And then, because there's only a single Jacob's ladder up to this top, where the rat lines go up to the other ones. But it was experience.
Anything else about your time at Shotley?
No, not a lot.
You were only there 5 weeks, weren't you?
That's right, yeah.
Now, so then you go to the gunnery school.
Yeah, can I have a pause a minute?
Now, you weren't at the gunnery school long. What happened there?
No, well, what happened was...
Did you actually start
training? We went up to the gunnery school to do a course. But there wasn't a course starting for over a week. So we were sent to the petty officer's mess to look after that, keep mainly to do with the billiard table and clean
now,
up.
Do you know what month this was?
Can't tell you roughly.
It's just in 1943, is what you know.
Yeah, it's in 43.
And what happened then?
We were doing this when I was sent by the Drafting Master in Arms office to report to the drill shed with all my kit that I'd been drafted with 11 others up to HMS Archer, who was swinging round the buoy at Loch Olch in Scotland. This was to join a skeleton crew to look after it because it had just come back from the Russian convoys.
Now, what type of a ship was HMS Archer?
What they call an escort carrier, which was a merchant ship that had been converted to an aircraft carrier. They used to call them flap tops.
And what were your first impressions when you got on board at Loch Alsh?
Well, it looked big to me, and first time I'd been on board a ship to live on board. We were shown where our billets were, but as soon as the captain saw my or the commander saw my records from the army, he said, "Oh, you were a PT instructor." I said, "Yes." "Right," he said, "that's your job." So I had to take all hands up on the deck and on the flight deck on the morning to give them PT. But there was just a skeleton crew. And I was quite surprised. This ship was an American. And it had coffee making machines on, ice cream making machines, a barber's parlour. You know, you never saw this on a British ship. At least I found this out later.
Did you like these facilities?
Oh, yes, they were quite, you know, good and comfortable. The mess decks were quite spacious, where you hung your hammock. It was quite spacious. And you had your own sort of mess table with your lockers on either side of it, and seating. It was quite good.